Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
What happens when I call customer service with a problem? What happens when I go into a store with a product that I bought online, but I want to return it in store? All of these things, you know, are going to be the base expectation of a shopper. I mean, we've got a lot of new things that are happening that many of us never considered before, I think. And I think the only way to do that is to really use the product and really understand what is that shopper going through on a day-to-day basis. What is that experience?
Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I hope you enjoyed my conversations with Paddy Dominguez, business growth strategist, and Glenn Twiddle, Australia's number one real estate coach. I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, John Andrews, CEO of Photify. John has more than 20 years' experience of work in the digital marketing field. He's helped build one of the first people as media platforms at Walmart, that's called 11 Mums, and he's also founded Collective Bias, a company that was acquired by Inmar in 2016. He teaches as an adjunct professor at North Carolina State University, and he's very active on social media. In our discussion today, John talked to me about changing the retail experience to adapt it to an online model. We talked about building relationships and serving user-specific content. And we talked about the idea of being your own user. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from John Andrews. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome today to the InnovaBuzz podcast from Raleigh, Durham in North Carolina, the USA, John Andrews, who's the CEO of Photify, a content-to-commerce media company for brands and retailers. Welcome to the podcast, John. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you, Jürgen. It's great to be here.
Now, Ted Rubin, who was our guest on episode 262 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, John. So a big hello to Ted.
Wonderful. Ted and I have worked together for many years, so it's an honor to be recommended.
Yeah. Now, John, you help companies rethink their retail marketing. And, I know you're a very strong advocate for changing the business model in light of what's happening online in the internet. And of course, as we record this, we're right in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. So retail marketing's been hit particularly hard by that. And given that situation that we find ourselves in now, non-essential retail shops closed and the idea of rapid and dramatic shift from physical stores to online is even more topical than what we probably believed when we set up this recording today. So before we start talking about all those things,
Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you are today? I know you've had a long career in consumer packaged goods and you spent time with Walmart. So how did that kind of lead to your own entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, sure. Happy to give you the clip notes of that. Yeah, I am a marketer, a brand marketer, product marketer at heart. It's what I was trained to do and have done most of my career. I worked for several brand organizations, including Hanes Brands, Newell Rubbermaid, and worked for several startups, a company called Picture Vision, which was purchased by Kodak back in the what I call dot-com one era. We were digitizing photos and putting them on this thing called the internet. It was crazy stuff, Jürgen. back around 2000, we were actually the back end of American Online's You've Got Pictures service and Kodak's Photonet. And it was an interesting time because very much like now, a lot of change going on. People didn't really know which way the world was going. We started to see some flashes and of change and how people reacted to it, how you know, especially how shoppers reacted to it and how brands and retailers sort of responded. So I did have the opportunity move to Bentonville and work for Walmart in a classic marketing role. It was marketing on groceries, and during that time got introduced to a new world, the world I'm in today. I got asked to help form a team that was responsible for emerging media. And I said, yeah, that sounds great. What is emerging media? And this is 2007, 2008. And it was defined for me as everything beyond the banner ad. So go take a look at all these things like Facebook and Twitter and other things which are just coming out of the ground. What are we going to do about mobile? You know, a lot of these things that, you know, we kind of take for granted today and really aren't that old if you think about it in terms of business sense, but wow, what an impact it's had. And as part of that process, I realized very quickly that I was the only person who didn't know anything about it. And as I began to look at digital kind of telltales, like, a Google search for saving money on groceries or saving money, Walmart, my employer, would not show up in that search in 2007 or 2008, which makes sense because they didn't produce any content about saving money on groceries, right? But what did show up was content from bloggers, from individuals, and there were a lot of especially moms and mothers and women that were producing wonderful content about frugal living and simple living and couponing and all kinds of ways that you could save money, and they would show up in the top of Google searches, and so. We began to work with them to really understand, you know, what they were doing, and actually formed a group called the Walmart 11 Moms that was one of the first people as media platforms. And that model, really fit into the things that we did every day at Walmart with cooperative media. So we began to work with our supplier community, the Frito-Lays and the Kellogg's and the Campbell's to create content, this new kind of content this way, but no different than we would have done with direct mail or with, you know, the circular or other things. So I met Ted during this time, and he was doing the same thing at a company called Elf Cosmetics. He was also working with influencers. We founded a company later, based on this business model called Collective Bias, which did this in aggregate. We began to build and grow that company, and we sold that years later to a company called Inmar that is in the shopper marketing space. And today I am working on the creating content again with large groups of people now at the employee level, with Photofi. So that's kind of how we got from here to there.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting journey. So right through the retail space. So what's the concept behind Photofi?
Photofi is a content creation platform that enables companies to give creative assets to their employees to make content via their local networks. So you're probably familiar with a company called Canva. And so we're very much like a Canva with the big point of difference being we are a we're a mobile only platform. And we're really designed for non-creatives. We're designed for the marketing team to provide assets via our platform that you as an employee of a company can create content and share via your network. So this increases the company's footprint because they're now leveraging the network of their employees as well as the authenticity and the localization of content. So one of our big partners today is RE/MAX, a global real estate company. Their agents around the world and brokers around the world use our platform to use RE/MAX templates and overlays and designs to make content for their social media properties, for text, email, any digital place that they might create and share content.
Mm-hmm. That's a fascinating concept, yeah. So you're really increasing your leverage as a retailer by getting the employees essentially to participate in the marketing directly.
We believe it's a new layer of marketing. So if you think about corporate marketing, and the things that corporate marketing is doing from both a traditional and a digital standpoint, you're able to really, I mean, just on a scale that I think most people can't comprehend, expand your marketing. We have a partner, Norwex, which is a direct selling company that sells cleaning supplies, and they have 15 to 16,000 people on our platform today. Collectively, those 15,000 to 16,000 people are producing about 100,000 pieces of content a month. And what's amazing about that is they're producing that and sharing that locally with their networks. So this scale of what Norwex is able to do is broad. And the relevancy is increased because your network is much more interested in what you're doing than maybe what some brand is doing.
Yeah, that's right. So I can imagine if I see my friend posting something, that's likely to grab my attention much more than a company, because the company, I tend to dismiss it as advertising.
Of course. Of course. Well, and your friend also knows what's relevant to you, to your community, to the things that appeal to you much on a much more granular basis than any company would be. So if you think about the retail space, we're talking a little bit about, I'm sure we're going to talk about COVID today. How could we not? But if you think about what's going on today in retail, there are employees at Walmart and Wegmans and all kinds of retailers today that are attempting to service people as best they can, through this crisis. You know, imagine the ability to create with a consistent brand voice, but do that on a local basis and be able to communicate, yes, we are in stock with certain kinds of products, or these are our hours, or today we are going to open at 7 a.m. for people who are 50 plus long. Whatever that local messaging is, to be able to do it in a brand consistent way, be able to do it with a local authenticity and flavor, it is what we're enabling.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really important point, to have that consistent message across the board for the company. I mean, I've had a a really interesting experience in the last couple of days with, and I'm going to name them because I'm really annoyed by them, Samsung Australia. My phone died, and of course, you know, the response was, well, I got onto the website to get support, and they had a big announcement about how they were dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. And I thought, well, okay, they're all organized, and you know, click this link to get customer support. So I clicked the link. All the phone numbers didn't work. Some of the links were broken. Ultimately, I did get onto a chat service that was customer support, and the response I got was, well, bring the phone into your nearest shop and we'll just look for the nearest shop. Oh, it's an hour's drive away from where you are. Bring it in and we'll take care of it for you. And I said, where are you? Where are you based? Do you realize right. that essential services are the only places physically, physically open? Your shops are probably not essential services. They'll be shut. How else can I do this? And anyway, there's a long story because it's still ongoing 2 days later. But you know, having people around the world in companies like that have a consistent message going out to customers is really important, I think, because the damage to that brand is pretty big in my mind.
And I agree with you, and I think that's the opportunity as well, is, you know, this crisis, and certainly there'll be others, are really, I think, bringing to light some of the benefits, not to be self-promotional, but whether you used Photofy or some other form of employee content creation, employee communication, we are not in a centralized world anymore, right? Mm. And your expectation as a Samsung user is someone near me can help me, right? I would think the same thing. So, you know, empower people to be able to do that, right? Empower my local grocer to let me know that they have a new shipment of produce that has been delivered. We were at our local grocery last week, and there was a potato here. Beggars can't be choosers at that point, right? But
that's right. Yeah.
You know, and I went the next morning, and the produce section was full. So Imagine the benefit, to your point, of them being able to communicate locally, still with brand consistency, right? But being able to, those employees are capable of doing that communication, and I think that's a big mindset change in marketing that's taking place right now. Is, you know, I've been a marketer since the late 90s. You know, the idea of store level employees creating content was bleh. I mean, there's no way, yeah, yeah. Right? But today, you know, everyone creates content. You know, I mean, if you make a Facebook post, you're creating content, right? People can create
That's
content.
Right, yeah.
Empower them, give them tools, give them training, give them guidelines, but empower them to do so.
Yeah, I'm involved in our local community bank, and it's a franchise with one of the larger banks here, and there's very strict guidelines as to what we as a community can post that is related to banking. Of course, banking, there's, you know, issues around not giving advice and so on at a professional level, but in terms of promotional content around the activities that the community bank is doing to support the community, those sort of things are very strictly controlled by the corporate marketing group of the bank. So, that would be another great example of how you could empower those, because there's many of these community banks around Australia, how you could empower those community organisations to actually promote the work they're doing in the community and at the same time be consistent with the branding and the whole brand image of the bank.
I feel the same way, and I think there are, you know, there's a continuum of content. So in tightly controlled businesses like banking, for example, you can make heavy use of templates. So you could even get better communication at the local level because you're giving people, you know, much of our RE/MAX content is templatized. You know, real estate can have communication issues if you say the wrong thing, or with pricing, or, you know, there's all kinds of regulations. And a lot of that is localized or geographic specific. I'm sure, you know, Australia has very different real estate laws than the United States and Canada and vice versa, whatever. But by giving folks, this takes the guesswork out of it, right? So I can still take something that I know is approved, and I can personalize it, put my name, my image, whatever, and I can share that with confidence of knowing that that is an approved piece of content to be shared.
Hmm. Yeah, and it saves a lot of time as well, because I know in our process, it has been in the past that, you know, you put together some content and then you had to get it approved by a person. And of course, by the time that happened, often you've lost the timeline of whatever the information was.
Well, those are some of the models that I think are changing, because that's how it has worked. And yet the speed of communication does not work like that anymore. You know, you may be, you know, I share, which I think is a lot, but some people think it's nothing. I share probably 50, 60 pieces of content a day anyway, right? You know, and it's not that I'm seeking to overload people with content. Most people never see the content that I share, right? Because of the rapidity and the way that the systems work. So Ted and I talk about this a lot. You know, like we'll be talking to, you know, a marketer, and they're like, oh, well, you know, we only post on Facebook every other day. We're like, why? Like, no one sees your posts. You know, all of your posts anyway. You know, so it's a mindset change, I think, as a lot of things are, as things change.
Yeah, I like to think of it as if you, like, in a physical sense, if you walk out onto the street and just say, "Oh, good morning, everyone. Have a wonderful day," and then walk back in.
Yeah.
Unless everybody in the street happens to be heading out to work at exactly that time, nobody's going to hear it, right?
It's a wonderful example.
Right? Yeah, and you say, "Oh, I'm really friendly. I communicate with my neighbors all the time." And because you're doing it at a time when they've probably already left work, you know, they all think you're a total hermit.
But maybe your dog heard you, so at least good.
All right. Well, we've touched on COVID-19. I know you talk a lot about you know, the changing retail environment in general. You know, aside from the current crisis or pandemic that we're going through, but this has really highlighted how you know, the online space is definitely something that retailers need to be involved in, and I'm sure a lot of them, if they haven't been involved in it, are being forced to adapt to that right now. So talk us through a little bit about some of the trends you've been seeing before COVID-19 and how maybe people can ramp up their efforts right now and be much quicker about adapting to the online space.
Yeah, I think, well, and I think you bring up a good point. So I think it's about adapting to all of the spaces, right? So part of the challenge now for a retailer is my expectation, your expectation as a shopper, just what you were talking about, is I expect you to be able to deal with me wherever I want you to now, right?
Yeah.
So that may be in a store. It might be on my phone. It might be via a third-party site like Facebook. It might be don't know. Right, you don't know where to anticipate, and I think what COVID has shown is exactly how critical some of our retail infrastructure is. You know, you think of it, especially grocery, right? So we got to eat, you know, I think about every day these people that are going into, you know, to Walmart and Target and grocers and taking care of us are critical infrastructure right now, you know. And what's great is I think you're seeing this acceleration of things that have been coming into retail. So delivery and pickup are absolute, you know, just machines now. You know, if you think about the companies that were really prepared to do that, you know, last year, Walmart made this massive commitment to store pickup, right? And I won't get the numbers right, but I think that they had 2,500 to 3,000 of their 5,000 or so stores in the United States were pickup. So you can go online, pick your groceries up, you know. Imagine how much that investment and that focus benefited them last year, right? And we don't think about pickup as e-com, but pickup as e-com. You know, it's a form of e-commerce. So, whether I have it delivered or I'm still ordering my stuff online and I'm going to, you know, so I think what you're seeing is a rapid escalation now of people using these services, right? Same with restaurants. You know, you think about that retail space. I don't know what's going on where you are, but most of the restaurants here that adapted very quickly, we're all shut for, you can't go into a restaurant and dine, but you can do takeaway or delivery, right? So many restaurants are actually thriving that had embraced those models and said, you know, we're going to make sure that we can service customers, you know, how they want to be serviced. And I think what this is doing is it just accelerating that process.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And I think we've only just shut down restaurants and like every non-essential services as of last week. So yeah. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any evidence of something ramping up that quickly, but it certainly makes sense. I mean, if I were a restaurant owner and all of a sudden I can't have patrons in the restaurant anymore and serve them meals, all my business stops. So what can I do? I've still got all the infrastructure. I've still got probably supplies. Sure. I've still got the tools to cook the meals. So that's a logical extension, isn't it?
We have a single owner, you know, single proprietor restaurant near us that is kind of a higher end Mexican theme. And they, as far as I know, they didn't deliver. I'm sure they did through Grubhub or, you know, one of the services, right? But they instantly, we got a message from them and they said, hey, we are open. We're delivering in this radius, which is to us. So what I have imagine, my wife also comes from the retail industry. We talked about this. I said, they took their wait staff and turned them into delivery people. And then they're doing what entrepreneurs do. They're adapting to a situation. I've been very impressed. We ordered from them. We're trying to support our local restaurants, you know, and cooped up in the house all day. It's nice to not cook.
That's right.
There's that.
Yeah. Well, if you have to cook, at least that's something to do. A lot of people are saying, now that we're cooped up at home, there's nothing to do. And I'm thinking, well, there's plenty to do around the home. But I guess that a lot of people spend a large part of their time under normal circumstances out and about, whether it's shopping or dining or, you know, socializing.
And that's a retail change too, right? I've been at home now for almost 2 weeks solid, and really haven't left. I've been to the grocery once. Actually, just went over to our office today to check the mail, right? But literally was in and out and Clorox wiping as I went, you know. But. It's amazing how much time we spend out doing things in public, you know, having a beer at a pub, having a, you know, meeting a friend for coffee. I had my first FaceTime coffee with a a guy that I know in town, and he said, "Hey, let's get together for coffee." I said, "Well, I don't think that's going to happen, but why don't we do it on FaceTime?" We literally had our coffees and we FaceTime, you know. But you're in your house. So think about the opportunity though for retail to adapt to not just now this time of crisis, but in the future, giving people different kind of options. And I think that's going to be the big, final impact of COVID. Is retail change is going to, move a step change or two faster than it probably would. We're probably going to advance our retail change by 2 years. I don't know. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, that was one of the questions I had, which was around, given the current situation we're in and people are being forced to adapt, what do you see as some of the trends that are likely to come out of that for the future once we get back to normal and that are still going to survive?
Sure. I think we talked about this a little bit. I think a couple things. One is I think a lot of weak retailers, unfortunately, are going to go away. There are a lot of folks who have a ton of debt and they're just not, they're not going to be able to survive this. And that's terrible for those entities and for the people who work there, but probably good for the ecosystem because there are probably a lot of retail, I think, that has become somewhat redundant and irrelevant that's not needed, and they were going away anyway. I think this is just going to say, this doesn't make sense to keep doing this. Let's make that change. I think that there are also going to be some interesting changes, and you've been watching this going on. Nike today launched a free workout app, part of its app, right? So they have workouts that you can do at home. They're free. They're using personal trainers and whatever. To access them, you have to sign up for the Nike app. Well, that's wonderful for Nike, right? Because Nike, I think the Nike long-term vision is you will get Nike, you'll get Nike products from Nike, not from a third party, right? Not from a Foot Locker or from another part. Nike would like to sell you Nikes, right? Because one, there's a lot of margin that they're leaving on the table. Two, they know so much more about you as a customer. I've bought my last two pairs of Nikes out of Instagram ads that Nike has placed that are 100% targeted on my past purchases. So I buy Nike has a model called a 270 that I think is probably the most comfortable shoe that I've ever worn. And I'm a little bit of a sneakerhead, so I will buy these in different colorways. Nike knows this and is really good at now targeting me at the right time with a new colorway when they come out with it. And I'm a sucker because I buy them. They know I'm good. They know, have perfect, think about it. They have perfect data. They're not now spamming me with ads using third-party data, hoping that they catch me at the right time. They know I haven't bought a pair of shoes in 45 days, and maybe that's my cadence, whatever, right? They know. So I think that these kind of changes and this direct relationship with shoppers is going to be the future. And I think this crisis we're in is going to hasten that process.
Yeah, well, there's lots of examples of companies using data and consumer behavior to specifically target their advertisement to that. And, there's a whole nother discussion around, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think, there's good things about that. It's the ethical question in my mind is, what else do they do with that data? But the other side of it, I think, as a marketer, I think that's a really clever strategy to provide because that app that Nike have is essentially a lead magnet, isn't it? It's a lead 100%. Magnet, but it's targeted very specifically to those people that are likely to be interested in Nike shoes or other Nike Nike sports gear, because
that was my thinking, Jürgen, is, you know, they're going to know what classes I watch, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm watching classes about yoga, well, guess what you can target me with, right?
Mm.
You know, or if I'm doing high intensity workouts, or I'm running or walking or whatever, what a great data feed that they now have, to your point, and how they use that data. I'm with you. I am not a fan of right time, right place marketing if it is done with third party data, because you actually don't know me. You're making assumptions about me, right? Mm. If you're a first party data user, however, if I am your customer and you have a relationship with me, mm. and you're marketing to me respectfully, which means not all the time, you know, everywhere I go and everything that I do. I like that. You know, I like being marketed to where you're actually, you know, where there's actually a value exchange going on that is benefiting me, not just telling me you have some stuff for sale.
Mm. Yeah. And that exercise app is a really great way to do that, because the moment you fire up that exercise app to do whatever exercise you're going to be doing, then that's, you know, first of all, you're getting value out of something they've given you. And secondly, that's the environment that you might be receptive to learning about what is the latest exercise gear related to the exercise you're doing.
Right. Correct.
Mm. Correct. Yeah, I love it. Okay. So what other trends do you see that are, you know, moving forward out of this kind of stressful situation where people are being forced to change how they do retail?
Yeah. You know, there are a couple things that I think are particularly interesting right now. Are you familiar with the Brave browser?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Brave is a really interesting, an interesting platform. So it's a, you know, it's a Chrome-based browser that basically blocked almost all advertising and other kind of redirects and anything. So one, it makes your browsing experience much more enjoyable and actually saves you time, because you don't have all these ad servers, you know, that are interrupting your load to serve you ads. What Brave has also done is integrate a cryptocurrency called BAT. It stands for Basic Attention Token, BAT. And the Basic Attention Token is a really interesting platform that now creates a three-way value exchange between an advertiser, a publisher, and a consumer. So I have certain categories turned on that I have agreed to receive ads. And I'll receive an ad, but if I do, I get paid a certain amount of BAT tokens to engage with that. When I look at this model, I go, wow, that really seems like the future of marketing, because now there's a great value exchange. So imagine I'm Range Rover, right? And I've got a really high-end product, and I really have a specific kind of customer that might be interested. I might be willing to substantially reward you to tell you about the new Range Rover, because the benefit of doing that to the right customer at the right time, as we talked about, is pretty valuable. And the benefit for me is I may be in the market for a car, or I may, you know, be beginning to think of, maybe it's a year away, but I want to learn about what's out there. So yeah, I'll give you my time. You're giving me something in exchange. I think this is a perfect model. And you can see a little bit of this in play today. The crypto platform Coinbase uses BAT token to educate people about different kinds of cryptocurrencies. And they actually pay you to watch short videos and then actually take a little quiz to educate you about crypto. this is what I see as step one of a new marketing model that will be based on attention and an equal exchange, not, hey, you just happen to be reading an article, so I'm going to put an ad in front of you. I think that's an old idea and an old paradigm. And I think that this has the potential and other models like it to change fundamentally how we look at advertising and becoming something of value versus something of an interrupt versus a source of interruption.
So in some ways it's buying attention.
You're buying attention. And if you think about the models that, you know, you and I grew up with, we accepted ads as we watched free TV, right? And then, then that model kind of is still the prevailing model of most digital advertising, right? You're looking at Facebook. I know these things about you. I'm going to serve you an ad, you know? Well, that's awesome, but, you know, kind of stinks for me because I'm not really here for ads. I'm here to look at pictures of cats.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, if you take the TV, the TV analogy, I mean, my classic one is if I need to go to the toilet in the middle of a movie I'm watching, oh, good, there's an advertising. Or go get a drink or some snacks. Yeah.
I think it's got potential.
People tend not to pay attention to those ads.
Yeah, 100%. And I think advertiser response to that is great. I don't need, you know, I need an infinitesimal amount of people to actually pay attention for this to be successful. So I'll serve more ads. And in a digital environment, that becomes super annoying. You know, Ted and I talk a lot about that. We don't believe that many brands actually do any analysis of creating negative brand equity by spam, you know, by just spamming the life out of people, right? Like, I don't want to have your ad in my stuff all the time, right? And and especially now in COVID, you know, it's almost preposterous. You know, we're watching TV with my wife last week. Most of these ads have stopped. But there were still ads going on for car companies related to the NCAA, you know, the NCAA basketball tournament. Mm-hmm. Well, that got canceled 2 weeks ago. So that's one, completely irrelevant, right? And two, it makes you go, what are you guys doing? Like, what are you, just stop, you know?
Yeah.
I get it. And I don't think anybody's going to be buying a car right now anyway. I'm sure not. You know, not even furthest thing from my mind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching some TV last night and I was actually paying attention to the ads under that very aspect. And I thought exactly the same thing. They had actually, I didn't notice any sports related ads because all the sporting codes have been stopped here as well. But they did have car ads I had the same thought, who's going to be out to buy a car now? I mean, you can't go out and take a test drive for a start. So, right. And there were, though, the occasional ads that had adapted. So there were some of the big retailers were focusing their advertising heavily on how to order online and so on. So I thought, sure. Okay, there's some that have adapted and straight away kind of shifted their focus.
GM did that here this week. You know, they have their own star system, their in-car communication system, and it's you can use it to get assistance. It's a in-car Wi-Fi system and stuff, and they basically turn that on for free for everyone. It's a paid service if you have a GM vehicle, and they still use the ad to say, oh, and if you need a car, we've got really low rates and, you know, 0% financing for the rest of your life and, you know, whatever. But I thought the same thing. They had done a nice job very quickly of adapting to, okay, well, here's how we can help you, but we still need to be, you know, top of mind and aware. Although I can't imagine, you know, there's no way I'm buying a car. There's no way I'm doing anything financially for, you know, just, you know, trying to, you know, root for the stock market to maybe recover a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So,
yeah, of course. I think, you know, there's a there's one thing that people can do at this stage, you know, whether they're any sort of business, whether it's retail or any business, and that's continue to be visible. So I think I read something the other day, and I can't remember who to attribute this to, but it said something along the lines of, in this current situation, you're either leading or you're hiding. So I thought, well, that's really interesting. So some people have gone quiet because their business has slowed right down. But I think, you know, the example of GM, okay, we, you know, existing users, we're going to help you out by providing this service that normally is a premium service, but we're going to make it free for everyone for this period of time. I think to do that, you know, because it creates fans out of the existing GM drivers, and it also reminds people, I mean, if, you know, 6 months or 12 months down the track, you're in the market for a for a car, you might remember that GM will look after you, even, you know, even in unusual situations.
I think you're exactly right. I think you cannot go away right now, and you do have to think with empathy on how do I support people through the process. And you're right, people are going to remember who was there for them, who was there to help, right? Yeah. When this is over, so it's a great point, and I think you're seeing very quickly. Been very impressed with the a lot of the marketing community has adapted very quickly to that idea.
Yeah, the whole it sort of comes back to this whole question of customer experience and what makes up the entire customer experience and what, you know, what role marketing plays in that. So what are your thoughts on, you know, the role of marketing in the entire customer experience from, you know, we don't know anything about your company right through to, okay, we're a customer now and we're using your product. And so what role does marketing play right throughout that journey?
Well, I think you had a great example of that today, right? So the challenge with marketing and customer experience is the real customer experiences exist in the clinches, right? So everybody does most people do a great job of introducing your brand and creating preference and all of those things. But what happens when I need customer service, right? What happens when I need when I have a problem? You know, what happens when, you know, I noticed today I got a GoGo in-flight subscriber, right? So I subscribe to in-flight Wi-Fi. You know, it's cheaper to pay monthly service. I take 3 or 4 trips a month, so you know it's the cheapest way to pay. Well, I got billed today because it's on a recurring charge, and I thought, well, nobody's flying anywhere. I mean, GoGo, could you not be proactive enough to go, hey, we're going to pause your billing right now because you're probably not going anywhere anyway? I mean, that was a terrible experience. And this is a product that, I don't know that I love it because it's not extremely robust, but I use it. And I've been a subscriber for, 5 years or something. But when I saw that bill today, I was insane. I called him out on Twitter. I said, hey, what an opportunity for that company to lean in and communicate, hey, we're going to pause your billing until this is over because, you're not going to fly anyway. No, it got billed. But so those are the customer experience problems, I think, that we have, crisis or no. When there are a lot of unforeseeables, and I think people really have to spend a lot of time, what we call eating the dog food. You need to sign up for your email chain. I think of all the brands that I get an email from every day, right? I'd be willing to bet their CEO, even their CMO, other folks don't know that. Right. Because can you imagine? We're going to send a customer an email every day. But it's somebody's job to drive revenue via email. right? I mean, that's their job, and their reward system is, oh, you grew revenue 20% last month. Good job. You get a raise, or you get commission, I don't know, whatever. But now you're destroying brand equity through customer experience of, why are you sending me an email every day, right? I don't care who you are, what brand you are. I probably don't need an email from you every day, right?
At least the option of saying, you know, I'd like a daily email, or I prefer it if you just send me something once a month as a kind of a wrap up of what's going on with your company.
Sure. But to your point today, to your example, what happens when I call customer service with a problem? What happens when I go into a store with a product that I bought online, but I want to return it in store? All of these things, you know, are going to be the base expectation of a shopper. If the brand on the door says Walmart, I don't care if it's Walmart in store, Walmart e-commerce, Walmart mobile, whatever. It's Walmart, right? So I can't have a breakdown between those systems. But I mean, my expectation is it's Walmart. Deal with it. I bought this online. I didn't like it. I want to return it in store. Oh, you have a different price in store? Well, that's your problem. Figure it out, you know. And people are. I mean, we've got a lot of new things that are happening that many of us never considered before, I think. And I think the only way to do that is to really use the product and really understand what is that shopper going through on a day-to-day basis. What is that experience?
That's a really good point to have, decision makers within the companies actually sign up for the emails or go through those different experiences. As a lot of the times I get very frustrated when I'm going through some sort of experience. And that's one of the things I often say to my wife, you know, whether it's filling in a form or purchasing something online, I say, you know, whoever designed this system has obviously never used it.
Yeah. You know, one of the first things I do when I get up in the morning is I make a Photofy. One is I get to see if our app is working, right? Which is always helpful. And there's been mornings that I've woken up and I've made a Photofy and it wasn't, you know? So that's always fun. But also I get to see that experience of the customer and of the user. And it's, you know, many times, you'll find not happy with it at all, you know? So I can't imagine that our users are. So, you know, again, what do we do about it? Let's know about that and let's understand it.
That's great. Well, thanks, John. This has been really fabulous. I'm just looking at the time, and I think it's a good point to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome as a result today.
Wonderful.
So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
It's a great question. I've been listening to a book called Loon Shots. I don't know if you've come across that book, but it's about big corporate innovation. And it really talks a lot about phase change and the difference between an entrepreneurial organization and a franchise organization, an organization that's producing the things that it does. And it's a bigger, it's really caused me to think about trying things in a different way. And here's probably the most innovative thing you'll do in your daily life is do something completely different every day than the day you did it before. I use driving home, which is actually one of the suggestions. It is just drive home a different way, right? that simple thing will remap your brain, and it will make you think about things differently. We are creatures of habit, and mm-hmm. we get into habits. And when you start thinking about being innovative and thinking innovative, it's very hard, because we tend to, taking the same route home every day is easy for our brains, right?
Yeah.
But it trains your brain to seek out the, you know, simplicity versus challenging it to think of a new way to go home. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. It sort of it builds different neural connections in your brain, which is essentially what innovation is.
Correct.
Hmm. Great. All right. Well, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Great question. I frequently will look at other unrelated industries to get new ideas.
Hmm.
I know several times in my career, new ideas and new innovations have come by looking at how some completely unrelated industry is doing something. We, in a company that I worked for, a footwear accessory company called M+ for a number of years, and we were able to create basically a whole new category of products by following the beauty industry, which is not what people think of with footwear accessories, but yeah. basically create an entire new line of products for women, because women thought that footwear accessories were ugly and they would never buy them. So we just copied what the beauty industry did made products clear and invisible and attractive and approachable and not look like it was made for a man. Was it tremendously big time thought? I mean, you know, but maybe build a product for your customer that'll work. Mm.
Yeah, great example. Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea of looking outside your own industry, and it kind of comes back to your first point as well, doing routine things differently.
Yep.
Hmm. All right. Now, other than Photofy, do you have a favorite resource that you use most often?
Waze. It literally is probably my favorite app. I use it no matter where I go or what I do. I love, I obviously know how to drive to work, right? You know, I've got four or five routes I go, like I talk, I can go different ways. But Waze gives me information about my trip that is crowdsourced, where there's traffic, where there's accidents, we were coming home from our we've a place down at the beach here in North Carolina. We were coming home the other day, and it rerouted us a different way because there was a huge accident on our primary route home. You know, imagine that, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, you've been sitting in traffic for an hour. You know? It's a great combination of people and machines working together.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great example. And also, you know, it opens up possibilities, coming back to your answer to the previous question, because I could imagine that whole concept of, you know, feeding in information that's live update into an app from your community, that, you know, it sort of taps into what you might have done in the past is calling somebody up for advice, but now it's like calling up everybody for advice, but you've like got
a group brain, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Hmm. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project on track?
Oh, man. I find for me and for our teams, we have a process called top three. I think a lot of people do this, but on Sundays we will all share our top three priorities, and then we have a meeting Monday morning at which we align and we agree as a team. These are the top three. These are the three things we're going to do this week. They're not the top three. These are the only three things we're going to do this week. Mm. And those change based on what we have to do. And we laugh because some people submit 5 or 6 things because everything's a priority, you know. But we're like, that's great. We all get to agree on 3. And once we agree on those 3, it's locked in. And I think that team process of deciding and agreeing, okay, these 3 things are more important than anything else we're doing. Those things are important too, but not the top 3. So it's just a little process that we use that we find helps us with efficiency, because otherwise everything's important. So
yeah, that's right. And if everything's important, then nothing's important, isn't it?
Nothing's important. Correct.
Saying, yeah. And I think, you know, I fall into this trap all the time that just put too much on my plate and think, oh yeah, I'll get that done and I'll get that done. And then of course if you try to tackle them all, you only get half of it done at best. So it's, yeah, that's a great approach to focus on those things and really just say they're the only things I'm going to work on.
That's it. That's it. And it takes, learning and self-discipline to do, because it is anxiety producing. I'm going to cut my list off here, but this is important too. Yeah. Okay. So trade one out. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that process. We get a lot of laughter out of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think that's a similar question to the previous question. I think the biggest form of differentiation is not by what you do, it's what you eliminate, right? So really great brands do less and do not try to appeal to everyone. I think the best example of this was, do you remember the Apple commercials? And it was Mac versus PC. And basically what they were saying is, hey, look, the Mac isn't for everybody, you know, it's not for everybody. and that's okay, because it's not for you. And I think they did a great job of talking about exclusivity, where most brands try to talk about inclusivity. We want the broadest reach. Well, the product, the best reach is being exclusive, because your brand is not going to be for everyone. It's just not. There's a great story. If you remember the launch of the Ram truck, and when Dodge launched the Ram, it was really radically designed and whatever, and they did focus groups, and basically 80% of the people hated the truck. Right. And so I don't remember the exact circumstances, but a reporter is asking the brand manager about this. And he says, well, my current market share is 8%. So if 20% of people love the truck, I'm going to get a raise, because we're going to double our market share. So yeah. I'm like, man, pretty good point. I really think that really defining all the things that you're not help define the things that you are, you know, and I think a lot of brands do that in reverse.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I love the example. Yeah. So be clear about what you are not. Yeah. And I think, you know, many folks say in answer to that question, be yourself. And I think that you've kind of describe some practical way to do that, because if you're trying to be things that you're not, or appeal to people that are not your target market, then you're not being yourself, you're not being true to your own identity or your own culture, values, whatever.
We talk about at Photofy quite a bit, because this is a branding conversation we have a lot. We are not the most feature rich, the most cutting edge content creation platform available. We're not. And by design, our goal is to be the easiest, right? The moment you do anything that makes content, makes creating content difficult, or I have to think about it, or it takes time, or it's in any way has friction, people won't do it. So We are a content creation platform for non-creatives. And we try to really reinforce that to ourselves all the time. Hey, we should have all these bells and whistles and these things and do all this cool stuff and have VR and whatever. Nope. We should not. We should not. Yeah. We're not Snapchat. We are not. Snapchat is really good at that. And I think they should be great at that because, you know, a real estate agent in Iowa is not going to be putting VR into her content creation because it's difficult. So let's focus on that. That's something we come back to a lot in you know, how do we remain friction free content creation?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So make it easy for the customers rather than just pack it with features so that you can say, well, we do all these different things.
We do all the stuff. Great. Yeah. You know, I think about, you know, think about AOL and think about even Facebook to some extent. They just do all these things. And at some point they do nothing. That's why I think that's why I like Twitter so much. Twitter does kind of one thing. It does some extra things, but Twitter is a place I can go and share some dumb thought that I have and I'm do it in 2 seconds and I'm done. Yeah. I mean, I like it. It's easy.
All right. Well, thanks, John. This has been really great. Now, where can people reach out and find out more about you and about Photofy and maybe even say thank you for what you've shared with us today?
Sure. We're photofy.com, Photofy. I'm on LinkedIn, John Andrews. You can find me very easily. And on Photofy today, if people are interested, in response to COVID, we launched a free small business package. It's free for 6 months, and it has lots of assets that small businesses can use to create content and grow their business. So love for people to take advantage of that if that's something that would help them.
Yeah, that's very generous. Thanks for that. And we'll post links to those in the show notes so you can go straight through and check it all out. So is there a parting piece of advice you'd like to leave our listener today, particularly in the area of being a leader in innovation and in their field?
Basically, and this sounds, I'm a long line of person to give, you know, love what you do. You will be much more successful in life and much more innovative if you truly love the thing that you're doing in it. And if you don't, go find something that you are passionate about. I just believe that's the key to happiness. You know, it's not the job or the title or the thing. It's do you really enjoy the thing that you're doing? And if so, you will love it in a way that will help to drive innovation, help to drive thinking about it from new angles and producing new ideas.
Yeah, that's great advice. And reminds me of a song. What is it? It's sort of analogy is love what you do. And if you don't, then do something else.
Do something else. That's exactly.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Well, finally then, John, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
That's a great question. There's a really interesting gentleman that I know I think is one of the smartest thinkers that I have talked to in thinking about retail. The gentleman's name is Zachary Loans. I will introduce you to Zachary. Zachary is on the social media team at Walmart, and he is really thinking about how do we empower the people closest to our customer, those frontline employees. How do we empower them to take care of our shoppers, and how do they do that using digital tools, using social media, using content, using whatever that they have, whatever resources that they have, because, you know, as we've discussed, the store is one place that you interact with the shopper today. It's not the only place. I think he's thinking about it in some smart ways. I love what they are doing. Because of Zachary, Walmart has a TikTok channel, which is not a company I would think would be on the forefront of TikTok. But you know what? That's where the people are. That's where you should be. So it makes sense. So I'll make that introduction for you.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks, John. I appreciate that. And we'll look forward to having Zachary on the podcast. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. I've really enjoyed this immensely. I've learned quite a bit about your approach, how Photofy fits into the entire future of retailing. And certainly in today's climate, there's a lot that retailers have to think about in terms of adapting to the situation and then perhaps, you know, driving those changes forward for long-term success.
Thank you. Yeah, I enjoyed being here, and really, it's been an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you, Jurgen.
Yeah, thanks, John. All the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Can do.
Hope you enjoyed that informative and engaging conversation with John and took something away from his episode. He shared a lot of valuable ideas for moving retail businesses more to online, and I particularly love the idea of testing your systems by being your own user. I think that's really important in any business, and it's an oft-neglected little tactic. I'd love to know what you took away from John's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/John Andrews. That is JohnAndrews. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/John Andrews. You'll also find contact information for reaching out to John there, as well as links to the Photofy website, to John's social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. John suggested we have a conversation with Zachary Lones, Director of Social Media Marketing at Walmart, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Zachary, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of John Andrews. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we have some more fantastic guests lined up for you, including entrepreneurial operating system creator Gino Wickman and copywriter Christina Torres. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.